Hey guys, on today's show, I am talking with strength and conditioning coach, Brett Bartholomew. Coach Brett is a keynote speaker and author. He's written a book called Conscious Coaching, and he has a podcast called The Art of Coaching. Coach Brett is full of fire. I think you'll actually have to buckle up for this one.
Pull up a chair and buckle up. It's the Original Strength Podcast.
So, Coach, you have written a book called Conscious Coaching, and I know it is specifically for strength and conditioning coaches and maybe personal trainers. But really, to me, it seems like it could be for anybody, because it's kind of like how to be a better person for the most part. And I know you aimed it at coaches, but I do think you could probably offer this to anyone and it would help them out tremendously.
Sure. First of all, I appreciate that. It's crazy to believe that the book is nearly 5 years old now. You know, we've done so many things since then, released 3 online courses. We have like 6 or 7 different presentations we give around the world that are things that there's no way I could even fit into the book. And now, we run a workshop. We don't really like the term certification, because we've kind of feel like that term's been bastardized a little bit, right? There's some that use that really responsibly. And then there's some that I think make it seem like you can do a weekend workshop and become an expert. But we've built so much off of that. And you're right. It was never written just for coaches. I mean, certainly we use the nomenclature of strength and conditioning in there, no different than Jocko Willink and other people that have been in the military or other jobs speak to their main kind of, they'll speak to other folks that were in the military or served, but the principles are universal. And that's why the book was written. The book was saying yes, and that old improv trope of, hey, there are some issues within the performance community that we need to address. And this can go into fitness and physical therapy and what have you. But just like anything else, that extrapolates into other industries, right? I don't think I've ever read a book. I'm looking at my bookshelf right now. There's a book by a Navy SEAL. I've never read that book and thought, man, if only I was a Navy SEAL, would this apply to me? I think all of us have to be a lot more discerning of what we read. And notice that. And I think the big wake up call or big victory for us was about 5 years ago when we launched the book. There was a point in time when somebody at Microsoft reached out, somebody at Facebook reached out, somebody in a police department reached out, and we've had so many firefighters buy it, and they've said, hey, we deal with this too. And so that's eventually what really led to me and the company that we have now, Art of Coaching. By coaching, we don't mean fitness. By coaching, we don't mean sport. By coaching, we mean leadership. And that's exactly kind of what we're doing now. So you hit the nail on the head. I would say maybe 65% of our audience is the traditional kind of strength and conditioning, fitness professional, physical therapy. But every day, every week, we are getting more and more people in business, tech, finance, military, and beyond. And so we're super grateful for that.
No, yeah. And throughout the whole book and looking at the other stuff you've done, I kept having this, you've probably heard it too. I'm sure you've come across it, where it's in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, where Paul says to the Jews, I became a Jew, to the those without the law, I became one without the law. He became all things to meet people where they were at. And like, I just had that vibe throughout, reading your book and looking what you do. So to me, I guess what I'm saying is you're like a people whisperer. And I think that's really what makes you so good at teaching leadership and doing the things that you're able to do. I was just going to say, can you speak to, because you have your background story for how you got started in strength and conditioning, but I'm not really sure, you literally became a master communicator. How did you do that?
Well, I mean, if you look at, and by the way, I miscommunicate plenty. That's the fun part of it, right? We haven't been fortunate enough to have you at one of our apprenticeship communication workshops. Hopefully I can earn your trust enough to get you to one sometime. But, that's one of the things we talk about at the workshop is communication. We call what we do the apprenticeship communication workshop, because it's a lifelong journey, right? You don't become a licensed communicator. You don't become nobody ever really masters that craft, because all we know is, you could be an excellent communicator in the context of your business or your coaching practice. And you could, we're still liable to getting in fights with our loved ones, right? Like, who amongst us is a perfect partner, whether that's a husband, a domestic partner, a spouse of any kind, right? We all have moments where we lose our cool. I'm certainly no exception. That said, I'm aware of those things and I work on those things. My wife works in my business and our business, and we're constantly having disagreements about things, but man, how lucky are we? Because we both could have stayed in really comfortable jobs. We both could have not been tested, and we could both have the illusion of a really good marriage, you know, and who's to say that wouldn't be a good marriage? That's fine. People can be in comfort, but now we're in positions where we're constantly testing each other, you know, and we have to find that boundary between you're my colleague, but you're my husband and you're my wife. There's moments where she'll lose it on me. I'll lose it on her. And then we have to sit back and say, man, what did we do wrong? How can we go through this? How can we get better? And that's brought us closer. And I think, you know, that's what people have to look through. And it answers your question a little bit more directly, Tim, of you become a better communicator by going through the mess of life, one, and then two, being willing to be more self-aware. And also just, I mean, this is not a sexy thing to say, but spending money to improve. You know, I put money where my mouth is, and by researching and spending money on books and educational materials, I'm getting my doctorate in power dynamics. These are things that cost tens of thousands of dollars over the course of my lifetime. And as a strength coach, I never made more than 60,000 period. And that's after doing two unpaid internships. That's after doing a grad assistantship. I don't come from money. Both of my parents were poor. Now we grew up in a slightly above average middle income household, but my dad's job was entirely on commission. But now, I mean, it costs us several thousand dollars to run every event. And so when you put skin in the game, you live life, you research, and then you apply, you're bound to make some improvements. And I think that that's the thing that we're trying to really push the coaching community to do more of now. What we've learned since our workshops are open to everybody is, you know, coaching, the fitness community and strength and conditioning community, they have kind of this poor relationship with money. You know, we're very used to being sold certifications and workshops that are like $60 to $200, and we have 20 speakers come in and blah, blah, blah. And those are great. They serve their purpose, but it's not really deeper learning, right? You're not fully immersed on one topic. And, you know, within coaching, you can't coach without communicating. I mean, literally, you can get a great workout without dumbbells and barbells, but you cannot coach without communicating. You can't, you know, even if you're saying nothing, you're going to be utilizing nonverbals. So the core of coaching is communication. We wanted to do the research and extrapolate, what do we know? What do we not know? What does the research say? What can be applied? And then how can we pull coaches in that are maybe just used to reading books on this stuff or watching lectures on this stuff, actually come and practice? So to answer your question even more succinctly still, I hope I've become a better communicator because probably, I don't know, 90 days out of the year, I am teaching workshop after workshop on these things and practicing them in real time and using our evaluation because I am my own guinea pig. And also just constantly thinking, where can I get better? Because there's many times where I'm absolutely awful at it.
So that's cool. So in it, I cannot imagine the boldness it takes to, like, especially even working with your wife, like to know when you have a disagreement, to be aware and to step back and ask yourself questions to try to step forward in a better light, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you have to, right? Because at the end of the day, let's say Liz and I, my wife, we get in an argument. I mean, there are a lot of people out there that aren't as supportive as you. There are people out there that would love to see, oh, Mr. Art of Coaching, him and his wife ended up getting a divorce, but I thought you were an expert communicator. One, like I said, nobody's an expert communicator. We're all fallible, right? And that's the beauty of it. That's why you got to practice it. That's why you got to train it. Communication is a goal-directed skill, right? It is a skill. We're all born with the ability to make utterances and sounds. We are all not born with the skill of targeted communication. So, you know, you're always going to need to get better at it. You know, and there are people that would love to kind of pick that fight. It's almost like saying, oh, so-and-so is a great coach, so they must never lose a game. But my wife and I both just feel like we'd equally be hypocrites if we tell other people, hey, come to our workshops, come to our stuff, take our courses and learn where your weak points are, grow. And then we don't do that same thing. Right? So we might have arguments, we might have fights, we both might yell, we might clam up, we might ignore each other. There's plenty of things that, you know, are indicative of, I mean, there might be somebody listening that's like, well, in my relationship, this never happens. Give it time, right? You don't have to yell to be mean. You can be passive aggressive. You can be silent. You can be avoidant. You can do all these things, but everybody gets in disagreements. And so if you don't stop and think, all right, I want other people to get better at this. Where can we get better at this? What's the cause of this issue and how can we work through it? I don't know that you should be in the business of telling anybody else what to do because you're not applying it yourself. I mean, are you married, Tim?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
How long have you been married, if you don't mind me asking?
24 years.
24. You guys ever gotten in an argument?
Oh, no, never.
Yeah.
And you look like a super fit. What day is it?
Yeah, right. What day is it? And you look like a really fit guy as well, right? Are you reasonably fit? Do you keep yourself in shape?
I do the best I can. Yes, sir.
Okay. But do you ever have days where you just don't train and you eat like crap and you enjoy kind of just hanging out and what have you? Do you ever have days where, or maybe even you just don't train?
I honestly, I don't look at what I do as training as much anymore. I just enjoy moving. Like I think moving.
Do you ever have a day where you move less than other days?
Only if I'm hurt.
Okay. Right. But when you're hurt, like you sit there and do you take that day?
I do. Yeah.
Right. Right. So like the idea is that like, we're not always going to be perfect. There's somebody else that could be like, hey, even when you're hurt, you could do 30 million things. There's always times where we could do more, better, do this, do that. But you have to see the nature of where we tend to fail and what you can do better. You have to put skin in the game, frankly. And I think the core of the message is what I'm saying is, right now in the world, we have this idea that to be a leader, you need to be perfect and that you can't have skeletons in your closet, that you have to have this tremendous vocabulary, that you have to, you know, everything you do and everything you say has to align with this idea of productivity at all costs, what have you. That's wrong, right? To be a leader, you have to put skin in the game, face your ego. You have to drop, you know, a lot of your excuses. You know, we had a guy that came to our most recent workshop in Seattle. And he said, hey, I have to say thank you for staying on me. And I said, well, what do you mean? He goes, well, for 2 years, I've told you that I didn't have the time or money to come to one of these things. And he goes, and I finally realized I'm never going to have the time. I'm never going to have the money. I'm never going to wake up and be like, oh my God, I have so much time and money. What am I going to do with it? You know? And he goes, what I realized is I just didn't want to do the hard work. So it was easy when you guys put up a new date to be like, oh, sorry. You know, that weekend's this, and oh, sorry, I'm doing this certification that weekend, and oh, I'm doing this. And he goes, but really what I was doing is I was spending a lot of money and a lot of time doing what was comfortable for me, doing things I already knew, instead of coming to something that was a little bit, you know, uncertain for me. I didn't really know what it was. I didn't know how I was going to react. I didn't know these things. And he goes, now I realize it's what I need most. And he's like, me and my wife are going to come to your next workshop. And so I think to have that level of self-awareness of saying, hey, where am I comfortable in my life? Where am I willing to go? How am I willing to challenge myself? That's my opinion of what we need in leadership, instead of this idea of like the perfect scenario where you're really just giving yourself very convenient excuses not to grow.
That is awesome. So let me ask you this though. So a leader is fallible, and that's real. How do you balance that in today's world of no second chances? Well, I should say today's social media world, or the, you know, the media world of no second chances.
Yeah. I mean, are you asking how, when you say, how do you balance that? What's the specific question you're kind of asking, just so I can be super clear?
I guess because really good leaders do make mistakes, but that seems
everybody makes mistakes.
Exactly.
Sure.
But it doesn't seem like that should be allowed anymore. If you look at, you know, people get outraged about anything, And so I don't know. So sometimes it just seems like, you know, a guy made an honest mistake, or he made a mistake 10 years ago and found out about today. And then everybody just wants to turn on him and hate him. But, you know, that's, everybody makes mistakes. It's just that not everybody finds out about everybody else's mistakes.
Yeah. Well, what you're asking is a loaded question, because within it is kind of, why is the world so polarized? Right. And that's, sure, that's one whole thing. And that's a lot of what our courses dive into, because figuring this stuff out is kind of therapy for me, right? And that's why I've made the subject matter material of Art of Coaching and everything we do at artofcoaching.com about a better understanding of human nature. You know, one thing I always encourage people to do is just, if nothing else, go to take our quiz on drives. It's artofcoaching.com/whatdrivesyou. It's an absolutely free quiz. And we have a whole podcast episode that explains all the six drives or what have you. So one aspect is, you know, why do we live in this society that's highly polarized, politicized, and what have you? What's going on within our human nature, right? And, you know, I'm not going to be able to rehash what is essentially my course, my doctorate, or anything like that. But the simple answer is by and large, humans have this kind of scarcity-based mindset that we're always trying to determine who's friend and who's foe. Who's friend and who's foe? We're also not very self-aware. So we're really good at fundamental attribution error. If I see Tim driving down the highway at 90 miles an hour, I think, man, Tim is a psycho, right? What is that guy doing speeding? Where if I drive down the highway at 90 miles an hour, I'm really good at saying, oh, I'm late for an appointment, there's an emergency, what have you. So we're always very good at, when we see other people do things, that's a attribute. We're like, that's something about their personality. They're crazy. They're not reliable. They're whatever. But when we do it, we're very quick to, it's situational, you know? And I think that you see this with judgy people as well. people are very quick to judge, and they don't really look at themselves, and they don't see when they do this. Or, you know, if it's somebody that we love, we tend to, you know, give them a pass. We had somebody come to our workshop and they're like, "Hey, I love my family, but my family made me basically feel like I'm never in the wrong, you know?" And this led to a really unhealthy relationship with somebody and their spouse. They had said, you know, whenever my family, you know, I'm glad that they love me, right? I'm their daughter, I'm this, what have you. But they were always very much about anything that was going on in the relationship. It must have been my spouse. My spouse was putting too much pressure on me. It was my spouse's job. I do this. I work hard. I do this. And it kind of led to this me against, you know, the world attitude with my spouse. And eventually I had to stand up to my family and be like, "Hey, this is the person I love. They work their ass off. I know you have blinders on because I'm your daughter, but this is what's going on." And then we had 2-3 other people that they stepped up and they said this. And if this doesn't go on in your family, you know, something like this goes on in the organization, right? This is nepotism. You're looking at these things. So people are typically blind to their own bias, is what I'm saying, Tim. That's one. 2, people are horrible at dealing with change. Horrible at dealing with change. And I mean, they are. I mean, think about this, right? Like when we're presented with new information, we're very good at going into self-protective mechanisms. We're very good at it. You know, like what, like, do you invest in yourself pretty good in terms of continuing education? Like do you continuing education each year? Do you have kind of a budget for this, Tim?
Yes, sir.
What's your budget? Like a range, if you don't mind me asking.
Oh, $1,000, not a lot, but it's, you know, $1,000.
Right. Okay. And so what kind of thing? So for example, anything beyond $1,000, do you just have a hard line? I'm not paying for.
Oh no. And then I asked my wife and we have a conversation.
Right. Right. And so like, you know, but there are some people that like, they have this closed mindset of like, nope, you know, if it's beyond what is my comfort zone, if it's this and that, you know, I'm not going to do it. It's people don't like change because it threatens them. People don't like change because they get really comfortable and they're, you know, I think of my brother. I love my brother, right? Great. You know, he's my brother, but we don't see eye to eye on a lot of things. You know, he stayed at home his entire life and good for him. I'm very proud of where I come from. I'm very proud that I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska. We have a Midwest mindset. I could not have asked for a better place to grow up. But in my opinion, finding myself as a person entailed going away, right? I went away for college. I went away for internships. I went away and did this. I wanted to kind of see who I was, what I was about, put myself in unfamiliar territory. Now, mind you, I also had to do that for my career, right? Training professional athletes and what have you. Not a lot of those come to Omaha, Nebraska in the off season, you know? And also now with what we do with all of our workshops and what have you, we travel internationally. Well, I love my family. It's hard to be away from them. But if I lived in a city like Omaha that doesn't have a large international airport, now, even if I get back from the UK, I've got another connecting flight, which might mean another layover, which might need another this. Right? It adds another obstacle to it. So for both reasons of self-discovery, jobs, whatever, you know, I believe in you go out and you challenge yourself in different areas in life. You get out of your comfort zone. My brother's gotten out of his comfort zone in other things that he's done. I mean, he's pioneered a lot of stuff in the restaurant side of things. He's brilliant at that. But my brother wants to stay in Omaha. And he may change his mind, right? Maybe he's on here and, you know, brothers will disagree with you. But that's not true. Okay, well, at least until this age, you stayed in Omaha. And I remember at one point in time, he said, "Hey, you know, you left because of, you don't know who you are and you should have stayed home. You would have been closer to mom and dad. That's what it's about for family." And I said, "Hey man, on the other hand, maybe you're a little bit too attached to mom and dad. Maybe you should get your ass out of Omaha and figure out what you're really about and put yourself in unfamiliar circumstances." So we have people that are really biased. We have people that are scared of change. And then we have people that have been sold, Tim. This is the last one I'll tell you. And it's what my next book focuses on, this false dichotomy of black and white. You either believe in this or you believe in that. Right? If you're a good Christian, right? I've heard you mention faith in God in this. A good Christian never swears. A good person never does that. A bad person would never loot in Hurricane, or a good person would never loot in Hurricane Katrina. Everybody's really good at saying what a good person is, a good leader is. And you know what? Half these people have never been in that situation. They've never been in that situation. Do you like history? Do you find history interesting?
It's fascinating. Yes.
Right? History is fascinating. And of course, there were atrocities during World War II. Right? You think of Nazi Germany. Was every German in the world a psychopath? Was every German in the world just some evil person?
I actually have spent a lot of time thinking about that. And the answer is no.
Of course not. No, of course not. You know, and then people say, "Well, we would have never done this." How do you know? You have no idea what you would do until you're look at the country now. What if 3 years ago I said, Tim, role-playing scenario, worldwide pandemic hits, right? People have to do this, they have to do that. Hundreds of thousands of people are dying. You can't do this, you can't do that. How would you act? And imagine a world where people are fighting over masks and vaccine. Somebody would be like, oh, that's so silly. I just do whatever was needed. And then people, it's like, okay, now you put people in situations. The minute the pandemic hit, you know what people did? Hoarded toilet paper. They hoarded toilet paper. Why? We have a whole podcast on this because of what's called the zero risk bias. When the world around us changes, we are such base animals that we find whatever we can control, and that's what we can control. So that's exactly what our workshops make people have to let go of, all those things. We do tons of role playing, tons of improv. We put your back against the wall and we make you pretend. You know what? Just like world-class athletes pretend when they go through practices and scrimmages, just like the military has to pretend when they do war games or scenarios, just like doctors have to pretend when they're in surgery and the power goes out and they've got to be prepared of what to do if this happens. But where do coaches practice, Tim? Where do they just go work out more, move more, read some books? How many coaching certifications do you know are 100% about communication and social interaction?
How many?
Yeah. You know a lot of them?
No.
We're the first. We are the first to deal entirely with social skills and power dynamics in the world of coaching. How absurd is that when our job to coach is based on the ability to communicate? But why are we the first? Because a lot of people get into coaching and training because they love exercise or movement or training or whatever nomenclature anybody wants to use. So it's like, did you get in this because you actually like helping people, or because you just like being around athletes or working out or moving or what have you? And we know the answer. Sometimes people are like, oh, a little bit of both. But then it's like, great. Then what are you doing from a professional development standpoint to grow in your ability to interact with people? Because outside of coaching and fitness or leadership, strength and conditioning and fitness and physio, on average, $365 billion is spent a year by corporations in interpersonal skills. The world of coaching before what we did didn't even have a workshop on them. It's embarrassing. And so when you have a world that hasn't practiced that stuff, is biased, is polarized, doesn't know itself, doesn't like change, that's how you realize, okay, we're in this world of second chances. Why are we there? Those reasons. Two, what do you do to navigate it? You be you, man. You know, tomorrow, if the world decides to cancel me, you know, it is what it is. And believe me, I've said stuff on social media before. We have a member of our team that posted something about the NCAA women's tournament. The female basketball players got, 30-pound dumbbells and whatever to prepare for the tournament or during the tournament. Men had an entire weight room. She posted something because she was the head of women's basketball performance at Stanford. And she was being silenced, as were other coaches, from saying something about this. And she was like, would you share this on your social media platform? And I said, sure. I'm like, this is stupid. Why do women get 30-pound dumbbells, like a dumbbell tree and some treadmills, and men have this whole thing? I go, we're going to talk about this on the podcast because it's an interesting social dynamic. I had 40 death threats. I had people saying, oh, here comes the white male patriarchy. You know, you're just trying to promote yourself. One person said I should be lynched. Another person said I should be killed in some other fashion. So I've had that cancel culture come for me already. You know, we had somebody that went onto our website, found an image that we had taken. Let's say you come to our Nashville workshop. Well, we take a big group photo, right? After day one, hey, big group photo. Well, we had put a group photo of a workshop we did in Canada on our join our team page because we were hiring. We were just using a stock photo. And somebody said, you are not a racially diverse company and there's only 5 women in here, and just lit me up. Now, these people had no idea what this photo was. And mind you, as I talk to you right now, my entire company sans me is women. My wife, Allie Kirshner, and a friend of ours named Stephanie Seeley. That is our entire company. And so somebody, we live in this world where people cannot even do their research, not even know what they're talking about, not even give anybody the benefit of the doubt. But man, you can't prevent that. People are going to be people. People are going to be irrational. What the alternative is what? To hide? So I'm either going to wear a mask and be phony, or I'm going to hide. No, because I'm going to bet on the long term that this stuff is going to backlash, Tim. I think eventually cancel culture and all that's going to fold on itself, because this idea of moral superiority, not sustainable, it's all a joke. It's all kind of part of this victim mentality, mindset, power grab, burn everybody down. And there's no way, no progress will ever get made societally on this, you know? So I'm not running from it, I think is my answer to you.
That is awesome. And that jives with, I don't know, in your book, I got the vibe that you're no nonsense. You stick to the basics. You're great at the fundamentals and you plow straight ahead. Like you have your mission and your vision and you just keep aiming towards that mark. And that's pretty much what you just said there too. That was awesome.
Did any of that resonate with you? I'd be interested. Absolutely. What part of that resonated most with you, and where do you see yourself even falling into some of those traps? Meaning, where do you see biases or where you were short-sighted in your life or areas that you've grown? I'd love to know more about that. I'm sure your audience would too.
Yeah, it greatly resonated with me. Like, you know, you asked the thing about Germany, and because like you said, everybody right now, it is the black and white thing. It is either this or that. Either or, but a lot of it is almost everything is both and. Like there's always something in the middle. And I think life happens in the middle and not in the extremes. And so like when every country goes to war, they have to think they're on the right side. Otherwise, why are they doing it unless they're just, you know, mean? But you know, like nobody thinks they're the villain. So like, cause they have a vantage point that they're looking from and they're in the right, right? But that's what causes the disagreement. That's what causes the fight. For my own self, like you said, nobody dealing with change, I think, has been a shortcoming of mine throughout my life. I'm learning now that, you know what, change happens every single day. And I might as well just flow with it instead of fight it. So, and as far as personal, like the stuff that you just talked about, I do think that we should be allowed to make mistakes because that's the only way we can be authentic. Otherwise, we are going to have to hide and put up a facade that we can't hold forever because eventually that's going to really end horribly. And I think people deserve second chances or fourth or fifth chances. I think we live in a very stressed out, anxiety filled world that no one really knows how to take a deep breath and try to step forward in boldness or to be courageous. And I think what you're talking about is taking a chance to be courageous and not running and hiding.
But. Yeah. I mean, essentially, and making people role play and practice for that. Cause it's great. We can write a million books on it. People can put tweets out on it. I think I just got tired of leadership BS. So I said, we're going to make workshops on this. And that's our apprenticeship and that's what we've been working on. And it's what my next book is about. But, you know, I think coaches need to challenge themselves to do more than read books. Coaches need to get out there and practice it. I think, you know, I don't know one surgeon that doesn't go practice every element of their skill. And then also, you know, a tremendous amount of money is spent by surgeons having to go to, and doctors in general, let's just look at the medical community. You know, they utilize forms of improv. They utilize communication training. You know, I have a friend that's a lawyer. They have to engage in these things. I think it's incredibly embarrassing in coaching that we haven't focused more on this. I think it's incredibly embarrassing in coaching that we've been so fixated on training methods and tools and kettlebells and this and sports science and all these kinds of programming methods. We're like, great, that's one part of your job. That's one part of your job. The other part's people. How do you learn to deal with people? Oh, just by being in the trenches. No, you don't. That's like saying I get better at being a husband just by waking up and being married. What a joke. You have to put yourself in these situations. And so I just hope the coaching community wakes up to that. And we're not saying we're perfect. We're not saying we have it figured out, but we're saying our hands are in the dirt. You know, we're trying to provide something useful for people and whether they want to use that or not is their call. But, you know, in some way I'm going to ask you to think it's like, you know, when poor communication is the one thing guaranteed to make any situation worse, what are you doing to make it better?
That's awesome. So it is kind of like, I don't want to, cause I know I haven't been to your course, but it sounds like a good deal, like crucial conversations in the area of coaching.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak to that. I've never been to, I know there's a book called Crucial Conversations and I have it over on my bookshelf. I think I read it, you know, when I probably was a grad assistant at some point. I don't know if they do courses.
I have no idea.
Yeah. I can't speak to that. What this is based off of is over 10 years of work we've done on power dynamics, social interaction, you know, everything that, you know, is a combination of life experiences, research, and real-time role-playing an evaluation that we've created that's backed in research as well. It says, hey, you know, not only can we role-play these things out, but we can do video breakdowns, we can do this, we can do that. It's helping people think on their feet in a more practical manner and also get perspective, you know, because when you can videotape yourself in a role-playing scenario, have a rubric to score, kind of a here's how I thought I did in this, that, whatever. Then other people in the course do the same thing because they give you their peer feedback. Then we can rewatch it. Then we can practice it again. That's what we do. I can't speak to what anybody else does, but yeah, I mean, if what you're saying is, are you practicing kind of what we're doing is we're helping people train, rehearse, and refine for some of the most meaningful moments in their life, whatever that is for them. And we think that that's valuable and that's, you know, maybe it's dumb. Yeah. Maybe it's dumb where, you know, there were a lot of people that thought that I should just stay, you know, make workshops about how I train my athletes and speed and agility and strength and conditioning. And I love that stuff. It's great. It's a part of who I am still. But you know, at the end of the day, we just connect with a bigger mission. We connect with a bigger mission that, you know, communication impacts us all. Nobody's learning it. It's kind of like taking physical education and sex education out of schools. That's going to have long-term ramifications. Well, nobody learns how to communicate. Nobody learns how to communicate. They just read the same books everybody else read. They say, oh, that book was cool. Yeah, whatever. But communication's a skill. So yeah, it's something we're directly, we love. It's super, I think it's, to be honest, it fills my cup in a unique way, probably at a time where I was getting a little bit burnout and things in coaching. It's so refreshing to come back from these workshops. And where are we the rest of the year? So we're going to Boston next week, Nashville, Tennessee, Asheville, North Carolina, the UK, New York, New Jersey, Toronto, and to meet all these different people and every day to walk in there and be like, not only are we helping them in their business and their relationship or what have you, but it's just, there are a lot of people that just share some pretty complex stuff, man. And, you know, that to feel like you're doing work that matters, it's exhausting, but it's also really, really refreshing where I think that as much as I love still training athletes, if I was just going around the country teaching agility constantly or weight training and strength training, even though it's something I love, if that's all I was doing, I think I'd just be a little burnout. You know, I've done that stuff for a long time. Doesn't mean I don't love it. People love to make that a black and white thinking too. Oh, you're talking about communication now. You must not love this. You know, I can eat Mexican tonight and still enjoy Chinese food tomorrow. And yeah, so it's super refreshing. I'd be interested, you know, what are the areas that everything you've done with Original Strength and what have you, what are the areas that you're most fired up about in coaching and your own development right now? You know, I don't get to ask folks in your position this a lot and we don't know each other. So I'm fascinated. Where are you wanting to grow right now?
Where I want to grow, I want to be useful. I want to be helpful to people. I like teaching people how to move or how they're designed to move. But honestly, I really love conveying the message that how wonderfully made they are and that they're never stuck and that their body is, it has an amazing, like if people could just, I don't know if this makes any sense at all, but I want to help people feel amazing in their own bodies. And it's not always about moving at all. So,
yeah.
And so it's just conveying that message. And that's what fires me up is like to give somebody that spark of light or hope that, man, there's something special about me, not me, but them. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, sure.
So, I mean, so that's what I guess lights my wick more than anything.
So within that, like, do you still have a lot of gaps that you want to improve upon? Or like, what's the next step for you in terms of your own development, either as a husband, a coach, you know, however you define yourself, what's like, if you're looking at next year, cause I know there's on our podcast, we have coaches that ask this stuff a lot and they'll reach out. So I imagine your listeners have to too, when they think about, all right, where do I need to develop? Where do I need to grow? How do you set kind of what next year looks like for you in terms of your con ed? What are the spaces you want to grow more?
So apparently I'm going to one of your workshops next year, but in the meantime, what I do is like, I am highly aware, especially cause you hit the nail on the head right when we started talking, like it's one thing that I think I can communicate fairly well during a workshop. It's when I'm at home that I drop the baton in the loudest clanging, you know, all over the track where I just totally sometimes just miss it, where you know, being able to take a step back and ask a question, not a verbal question, but one inside where like, is this what I want? Am I going in the right direction? Am I listening right now? Stuff like that. Yeah. My personal relationship, interpersonal communication skills are, I guess, where I would like to improve.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense. Yeah. It's good that you have an awareness of that. I think, it's easy to not, you know,
it's a painful awareness.
sure. Absolutely.
So if somebody, cause you mentioned all the locations you're going to be at right now, or coming up, where's the best, BrettBartholomew.com where they can check out all the dates you got coming up?
Really artofcoaching.com, even simpler. Nobody needs to worry about how to spell my name whatsoever. If they just go to artofcoaching.com and they click around, we've made our website super easy, at least we think, to navigate. You can click on live events. There's digital courses. So if you can't travel, you don't want to travel, we have a course all about coaching. It's called Bought In. It's CEU approved. We have a course all about how to navigate your career and manage burnout in your life, right? None of us are given financial advice, how to manage burnout, how to navigate really trying sticking points in our career. So myself and some others that have been in pro sport, private sport, own their own gym. I mean, shoot, my dad, who was a financial advisor for 40 years, came down and we created a course called Valued that's all about that. And then we also have a course called Blind Spot that people can take digitally. That's if you're somebody that feels like you kind of have more to give, but you're not really sure kind of how to put that out in the world. Maybe you're dealing with imposter syndrome. Maybe you got all these ideas and you can't figure out which one's most helpful. We have all those three opportunities that people can take completely online. We have live events. And so if people want to go to immediately the live event website, just artofcoaching.com/apprenticeship. But aside from that, we have a podcast, the Art of Coaching podcast, on every major podcast platform. So we've really tried, Tim, and we failed in some areas, but we've tried to make it almost excuse proof, right? We've tried to make it excuse proof because coaches will get in their comfort zone just like anybody else. But whether you want free content, whether you want a book, whether you want a podcast, whether you want online courses, or whether you want a live event, we have all those things. So I just encourage people to challenge themselves and get ahead of the curve. Because if you really believe that investing in yourself is always the best return on investment, well, then think about this. What do you consider investing in the way you communicate? Because that's going to help every relationship in your life. It's just hard. It's hard and it can be scary for some, but there's a lot of coaches that have gone through it. We've had well over 1,500 go through our program. So you're definitely not alone. And all those things are there and ripe for the taking.
What about your new book you've got coming out? When can we expect that to be released?
Oh yeah. So that we will announce first on our newsletter and our podcast. You know, it's in the process of talking to several different publishers right now. Oh no, if there was a date, I'd tell you. What goes on when you do these things is you talk to different publishers. You know, no matter, even if the book was done today, one publisher might want you to wait 6 months. Some might say, hey, 2 years. It's all a matter of a bigger process. And so once that's released and once we have that information, definitely that'll be shouted to the masses. People can stay tuned to my Instagram, which is coach_BrettB, or any of the newsletter or anything like that. And once I know, believe me, the world will know as well.
Coach, thank you so much. This has been amazing. You're truly passionate and you are a great communicator. And I do think that is what makes you the people whisperer to me.
Thanks, Tim. Well, I appreciate the opportunity and anybody that's read the book, I just want to say thank you on behalf of my wife and I. You know, we put a lot of our savings into Conscious Coaching, which was the book that started it all. And we don't take any of that support for granted. Every year we donate a portion of proceeds from that book to either the Alzheimer's Association or Leukemia Lymphoma Foundation. So you can find it in Kindle, audiobook format, paperback, all on Amazon. It's all available across the world. And just know that we really appreciate that. It was self-published and your contribution goes towards a good cause. So if anybody's interested in that, they can find it on Amazon and we're super grateful and couldn't be more grateful for you for the opportunity to come on and talk shop, Tim.
Thank you so much for listening. This is the Original Strength Podcast with Coach Brett Bartholomew.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great weekend.